Hi, welcome to Howling Talent, the podcast that sheds light on human and animal talents in all fields. In this episode, we welcome Jim Archer, the owner of Elk Ravine Farm in Dutchess County, New York. Before we start, we must stress that their cattle and animals are not sold for meat, and any that do move on go to loving, carefully selected homes. I'm Anna Roy.
And I'm Yvonne Dagger. Let's get howling. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Jim, to begin with, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Well, I guess when it just comes to animals, I've always been in love with them and all different kinds. I'm very fascinated with birds. And anything else, you name it. And so I've grew up on a very small piece of property, probably about a quarter acre or less. And when I was a kid, my parents would, you know, we had dogs and stuff like that. But when I was young, they got me some pigeons. And so I had sort of fancy pigeons growing up. And then it sort of expanded from there. They said at one point, you know, you can have whatever you want when you have your own property. So when I was 23 years old, I bought a little A-frame house on 10 acres. And well, then from there, everything's expanded tremendously.
Yeah.
Wow. So and at this point, I moved to this farm. Well, I made this place when I bought my land back in 1995. Mm-hmm. We have a little over 90 acres here. And yeah, there was nothing on it. So over the years, I've been expanding. And the reason it's called Elk Ravine Farm, I started out with Rocky Mountain Elk back in 1999. And since it's changed, because they just really, with being a wild animal, they weren't conducive to having a lot of activities going on around them. So I went for a more conventional kind of an animal after that.
Mm-hmm. What made you decide on purchasing this land in Dutchess County?
Well, when I started out with the 10 acres, mm-hmm. and I worked on clearing it and fencing it and really trying to improve the land itself and not destroy it, I realized at that point in time, 10 acres wasn't enough, especially when you have large animals. Mm-hmm. Acreage is a requirement for, they need a lot of space for cleanliness, their well-being, for exercise. And that's when I decided, okay, let's get a bigger place. And it's ever evolving, I guess you could say, because I wasn't sure what direction I was ever going in. A good mm-hmm. friend of mine when I was younger in my 20s always told me, you have your animals because you love them, and try not, you know, don't ever plan to try making a living with your animals, because it's not something you can do normally. Mm-hmm. And one thing I found, he was very much right, and I always loved animals, that's why I had them, but I've been really fortunate in my life to find myself in a niche kind of situation with what I do with the animals now, that affords me the ability to expand and educate people with them. And now I'm definitely living the lifestyle I've always dreamt of.
Mm, that's beautiful.
That's wonderful. You mentioned that elks they don't particularly like other things going on around them. What are they like personality-wise?
The elk I had, like with anything I had, they started to really gentle down and get used to me. But where I live, we're in a very, it's a beautiful pastoral open area. And what they do around here is in the fall of the year, they do fox hunting. Similar to like everybody sees and they think of in the English countryside.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
what would happen is they would go through, they're not out. It's entirely for the excitement of listening to the hounds and the horsemanship.
Yeah.
But my elk did not like the idea of the hounds running close to the enclosure. And it would get them excited. So at that point in time, it was stressful for me if they ever got loose.
Right.
They were not the kind you could walk out and get a halter and bring them back. So I decided it wasn't the best approach. And with a domesticated animal, it doesn't care about that as much. The cattle, the buffalo, they look at it, but they don't get all excited. The water buffalo, the American bison, I actually had a couple American bison for a short period of time. They were a little too crazy for my liking. I like to have hands-on with my animals. If I can't interact with them and do things, to me, an animal that you can't interact with doesn't enhance your life.
No, it
And
doesn't.
if it doesn't enhance your life, you're not going to enhance its life, because the more you get out of an animal's affection or its close proximity, you're going to do whatever you can in your power to make their life that much more enhanced.
Of course.
And so, if you can't touch it or do anything, you're going to lose interest in it, sadly, but that's the reality of it. So that's why I love animals that you could do more things with and interact with, because it's just such a special connection you can have with them.
Well, I'm partial to Scottish Highland cattle. My great grandmother was Scottish, and they remind me of my home away from home. What is their temperament and personality like, and what makes them so special?
I would say overall, the main, I guess the reason I'll tell you how the reason I came about using them or getting them. A good friend of mine, he's a biologist that I started working with years ago, 20 years ago. He was using them for environmental grazing in New Jersey. And so what this environmental grazing, the Scottish Highlanders would thrive at, because the vegetation is very mixed. And for conventional cattle, they wouldn't thrive on it. But Scottish Highlanders, they can thrive on not, they have a much more wide open palate, and they find that more appealing, and they thrive and they do awesome on it. And with their horns, they could protect themselves and their offspring from predators. And hence the reason he got into them. And when I started doing that in my area, when I was asked to do the environmental grazing here with cattle, that's why I got them. And the difference being, over the years I've worked with them, because I tried my best to gentle them down. I've gotten some that were extremely aggressive, and I've got some out there now. As soon as they see you, they come over and they want to be rubbed. Everybody says, "Where do they like to be brushed?" I'm like, "Anywhere there is hair and there isn't hair." I'm surprised most of them have any hair left, because, yeah, they just want to be loved and brushed. And it's like, so they do. But that's something, like with any animal. I think you could take any animal, and if you give it the right amount of affection and love, excluding different dangerous animals,
Yes, of course.
but, excluding those, but anything within reason, once they learn about just the connection, they just love that to no end. But I do have a lot of the adults that we use specifically for the environmental work. They don't want to be touched. They don't know what it is. If I go to brush them, they just walk away. And that's their prerogative. We don't make an animal do anything. If they want attention, they come to us. And even like all the ones we interact with, they'll come in, interact, and when they're done, they mosey on, and another one will come and take its place.
What other animals do you have on the farm?
Currently, we have a group of Southeast Asian water buffalo. So we use those for eating environmental, excuse me, invasive wetland weeds and such. Let's see, we have a group of Nigerian pygmy goats, emus, Belgian draft horses, regular horses, miniature donkeys, ponies. And a whole array of different fowl, you name
Quite a
it.
collection.
Well, the diversity is always fun. And this, oh, and I also forgot the cooney pigs. So with all those sort of things, it's a good education tool when you have a variety of animals to teach people all about.
Do you find they have a therapeutic effect on your family and the farm visitors?
Very much so, specifically the cattle, because with their hair, I go outside and we have curry combs. A lot of people think it looks like a fish scaler, and it actually is. We've had people in the fish industry say, "Hey, we use those on scaling fish." And in the livestock business, we have them for grooming long-haired animals. And so I give all our guests curry combs. And a lot of our guests are so stressed out by everything in life nowadays. So they'll start grooming and they get one side done and then they want to go to the other because as they're doing it, the cows are lifting their head. And I tell people when their eyes, the cow's eyes roll back in their skull where you can't see the pupil anymore, you've achieved the goal.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
Oh.
Oh, that's great.
So they do that, and that's I find so many guests and the tranquility on the farm and the animals just being at peace, it makes everybody's, it's just very therapeutic for people to be able to interact.
And Jim, in 2005, you began working with biologist Jason Tesoro. I hope I pronounced his
Yes,
name right.
Jason Cesaro, yes.
And the Natural Conservation Service as an environmental restoration contractor. Can you explain what an environmental restoration contractor is and what it does?
Well, yes. So the group, the main organization, which is a part of the government, is Natural Resource Conservation Service. That's NRCS. And what they have programs for wetland improvement for landowners that you could
Oh,
participate in
wow.
programs. And so with Jason, we started, I met him 20 years ago, and he's a biologist overseeing these different programs. And
I
what they
see.
would do is have me come in as a contractor, certain habitats we want to improve and embellish upon. And what we would do is go into the wetlands. One animal that we work with is an endangered species animal called a bog turtle, which lives in the Hudson Valley and different areas of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Tennessee throughout the country. And so we want to improve their habitats because what's happened is it's been so segmented by roads, property lines, and wetlands over the years have been filled in. So these populations have become or going extinct because of the habitat turns into forests. And then once it does that, there's no sunlight and the turtles can't survive. They need that open wetland meadow. What we've been doing over the years, we put fencing around the perimeters of that habitat so we can put a couple of cattle in there. And what the cows do, not many. So in like one site that we work in particular has 33 acres. On 33 acres, we only put seven animals. And we're just preventing it from turning into a forest. And we're perpetuating that. It keeps a lot of the invasive vegetation. So you're helping one species, but all your pollinators, your songbirds, all those kinds of things are being helped as well because you're perpetuating their habitat.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
So we're using that's one thing as a fence builder. Then we would remove trees which had been weren't there previously, and so we do that, and then also trying to control invasive wetland weeds. My whole goal on my farm or my business has always been doing environmental restoration organically using animals versus a lot of agencies want to use like pesticides or herbicides in our wetlands. And to me, there's no place that any of that has any bearings to being used. So I'd rather use the animals to do something they do naturally. And during the summer months, that's where they spend their summer out on these grazing habitats. And in the fall, I bring them home. And in the fall, everybody's home. And it just works out. We're seeing success, but doing things naturally, it takes a long time. It's not a quick, everybody nowadays wants a quick, easy
Yeah,
answer.
sure.
And doing things naturally, and just like evolution of time, things don't happen quickly.
Yeah.
It takes time. And so what we're trying to do is turn the clock back because sometime in millennia, there was an herbivore, be it a moose or an elk, that was living in the wetlands, perpetuating that area staying that way by preventing tree growth.
Yeah.
Well, with that being removed, we've had to to do the alterations, and we're seeing great success by doing such throughout
Exactly.
the whole area, with all
Yeah.
these different areas and with different species as well.
Isn't that interesting? So interesting.
Absolutely.
Wow. And you are proud members of the Dutchess Land Conservancy Program. What is it, and how is it is this implemented on the farm?
Well, my farm, when I bought it, actually had easements on it through the Dutchess Land Conservancy. And what that is, it's a group of like-minded people that really want to support keep an open space. And what they, back in the era of when they was put onto my land, they would acquire large pieces of property and put limitations of what can be done with it to preserve it so it's not cut up and dissected into, 100 different homes. And so the land conservation is huge. People really need to remember that, we all drink water, and everything that we ha eat comes from the earth. So we need to protect all this land, because if we don't, and it's all cut up and developed on, you're going to have nothing but pollution. And where's your food going to come from? So I'm a big proponent of preserving land, conservation, and doing what we can to get people to enroll and help the cause of the Dutchess Land Conservancy. But every state and county and everywhere around the world, I'm sure, has some sort of conservation plan people should get involved with and try to help and protect the environment. Really stems down to the biologist Jason Cesaro. He's the one that started this program, and he oversees it. And over the years, 20 years of friendship with a like-minded individual, and he's the reason I have the education of knowing what I know now through his education. He was helping me, showing me over these years, and working together. And we've tried so many projects together, where we try something different, and it's a learning experience always. But through his leadership, it really works out. And he oversees all these projects. These projects aren't just started and walked away from. They're maintained by biologists and overseen by so many organizations to see what the improvement is, and animals are put in specific spots. And there's been a lot of research done over the years, so it's not like something just stumbling into. And that's the best part, because a lot of times now I'm afraid how environment is coming under fire with so many things. My goal is, and I was just speaking to Jason a little while ago, if funding is cut, or because a lot of these programs are through the environmental, the Endangered Species Act and stuff like that, they're cost sharing with landowners. If they're pulled, that funding is, I'm still going to continue, because I'm very lucky with doing the educational tours on the farm, as that's improving and funding and supporting through all that education. I'm still going to perpetuate my plans no matter what, if the programs aren't going to support us anymore in terms of help towards funding. I'll do it, continue on anyway, because I'll be able to support myself. What we get is so minuscule anyway. It might cover the cost of feeding the animal all winter. It doesn't do anything about their health or anything. I don't do the environmental work for financial gains, because if you did, you wouldn't even want to bother. It's something that you got to really do and love. If that's where it all stems from, because I couldn't imagine doing anything else without the animals and all, excuse me, and all that kind of stuff.
I admire your passion.
Well, thank you.
I think
We
it's
need more people
wonderful.
like you. I need
We
more people
do.
who do this.
That's for
Well,
sure, Anna.
that's the goal. If we can teach people, a lot of people don't even know what's going on out there. And that's where I feel so lucky. The passion that people have for the Scottish Highland cows, and I owe it all to the, I call it the power of the cow. I'm always amazed how far my guests travel. We just had guests that had come out on Saturday. I'm in Eastern New York. So if you can imagine, if you look on a map, where the northwest corner of Connecticut touches the southwest corner of Massachusetts and New York intersects. That's where I'm located. So I'm
Okay.
only 8 miles out of Connecticut
Right.
and 25 miles out of Massachusetts. We have guests that come. This is their third year in a row. They drive 6.5 hours.
Wow.
They
Wow.
come from Western New York. They stay in a hotel or motel in the local area, come and take the tour the following day. And, it's with the beauty of their love of the cows and the love of coming and visiting and their experience. This is their third year to come out. And I mean, God
Wow.
bless them. And my objective is always to make people's experience that much better.
Sure.
Because when they can, we try to make it where they can do what nowhere else can. We've had people lay down and cuddle the cows out in the pasture. If that makes them happy and it gives them
Wow.
that experience, we have the animals, we've implemented their cows' experiences to where it's acceptable to them, where they actually love that kind of affection
Oh,
because
isn't that
we handle them
beautiful?
from birth. And when they have that, and it's sort of surreal where people don't expect it. But one
Sure.
thing I try to tell people, it's not an animal's specific animals, because a lot of people go and, oh, I love seeing these animals. And I'm like, that's great. But don't go some other farm and go, oh, they're all going to be like there. Because they're not. This is something specifically doted on. Other farmers don't have the time. I didn't have the time 4 years ago to be home working with my animals every day and doting on them and doing that sort of stuff. It's just the last 3 or 4 years where we've been really having the fortunate part where people coming to the farm, and I realize people don't want to just look at an animal and pet it through a fence. They want to be out in the front field with the herd. And currently I have 48 of them. So it's an experience where, when they come, it's not like you just got one or two where that's nice. But when you have a whole group walking around you, granted, you don't touch every one of them because not everybody wants to be touched. And we honor what that animal's opinion is. If they don't want to be near you, that's fine.
Well, each animal's got their own personality and their own wants and needs, and
Just like a
they're
person.
exactly, they're
That's
individual.
right.
And
That's
even though you could be the sweetest, lovingest person today, but tomorrow,
right. Don't want
yeah, tomorrow, they'll leave you alone a little bit, right?
to
you. So what is a typical day on the farm like for you? I mean, I know that farming and animals tend to deliver frequent surprises. But what's your day to day?
I guess the biggest thing is don't make plans. Because at any given time, matter of fact, it was a month ago. I was doing a phone interview for a local news magazine, and she was asking me this identical question. And as soon as I hung up the phone, I said, "Well, I can never make plans because you never know what's going to happen." And my fiance walks in and says, "Oh, one of the cows just had a calf. We weren't anticipating it. It was out on the ice and snow." And so we usually give the new mother and the newborn time to bond and hopefully get up and nurse. So we give them a little bit of time. So we went out later on to observe it. And it turns out he laid down on his side and started to freeze up. So then it all went into a whole thing of putting him in the sink. And once that happened, and it was ironic because I posted what we were doing
Sure, I saw
on
that.
social media. And ever since then, it's just gone haywire.
That's
Which
frosty,
was,
right?
yeah, that's Frosty. So when everybody's seen, and then right away, as he got better, I took him outside. And of course, the little devil himself, which they've never done in the past. They usually a newborn baby, they're bonded to me because especially you can watch some of the reels and you could see he starts to recognize
Yes, he
me
does.
and as his mom. So we went outside and he was running around and I thought he was going to lay down, which they always normally do. He took off and went up in the woods about 200 yards away.
Oh, my.
And he's the same color as snow, and we had snow on the ground and I'm like, I couldn't find him. And I actually got a heat-seeking drone.
Oh.
I had a guy come up. He drove about an hour to come to the farm. God bless him. His name is Heat Seekers, a drone service out of Carmel, New York. He found them, and what they're using, which I didn't realize, it was a great learning experience because, and this is would be interesting for you guys as well. He's a service providing people that lose their dogs. He finds a lot of lost
Oh,
dogs.
wow. Interesting.
And so this is a great thing. I didn't realize it even existed until Frosty went on his little sabbatical here. And what a wonderful service his name is Mike Coyne. What he's providing, because they could find, I thought, how are you going to find him here? And within 20 minutes, he had him, and he was able to zero in. He could find this time of the year with the ground still being cold, no vegetation. And
Wow.
what a sigh of relief. And he can find it.
Oh,
And I see on,
sure.
I follow him on Facebook, and a lot of times he's finding people's pets, their dogs.
Yeah.
It's a
Yeah.
great service, and
Wow.
I'd never thought of it prior to this. So it was a good learning experience for that, you know.
Isn't that beautiful? That's great.
So that's just another, it's amazing what you learn
Yeah.
interacting with the animals and then all the great people that you meet as yourselves. This is a privilege to be interviewed and to find out about all this stuff and hopefully get our word out to educate other people about environmental stuff.
Yeah.
Will you give pre-booked hands-on educational farm tours to give visitors personal experience with the farm animals and teach about their care and the environment? Can you tell us a bit about the tours and what your visitors can expect when they come to visit?
When they come to visit, it's just their group. So there might be additional groups on the farm, but I have my daughters, my fiance, and family friends that come that have experience with different groups of animals.
Okay.
So what we do is, when the weather's right, we actually go out for a horse-drawn carriage ride around the property so you can see the different habitats that. On the farm, we have such a diversity of habitat, and the biggest one that always draws my attention a lot of times is the wetlands because it's what we do. But we're able that we go through on a carriage, weather permitting, and highlight what we're doing on different areas and different properties. And then we come back, and one of us, predominantly me, will take them out into the cow field, and they can interact by grooming, petting, hugging, whatever, with the cattle. So they get a hands-on experience. It's not on the other side of the fence. My slogan I came up with is, see what life is like on the other side of the fence. So you can interact with them. And then we have areas where you go in with our emus, our pygmy goats, miniature donkeys and pony. And we also have a livestock guard dog, Sasha. We call her a livestock guard dog because she might protect them from a predator, but from people, I think she likes to protect the goats by absorbing all the hugs and kisses. She likes to get in between and sort of block. She's like, she just wants to make sure that all the attention is focused on her. But anyway, and then we go on. We have some young water buffalo that we interact with. And we have a wide array of horses that we interact with. From we have, I'm not sure if you're familiar with hands on a horse, which is a form of measurement. Like we have a small pony that's maybe 10 hands tall, which is 40 inches. And we
Oh.
have a Belgian draft horse who's over 19 hands tall. So he's about 6 foot 4 or 6 foot 5 at his shoulder. So he's just
Wow, big
one
boy.
extreme to the other. And this way, people can actually pet them, see how big they are, and we educate different requirements every animal has. So we have a whole thing. It's a 2-hour tour, and it's pretty entailed. So
And
it's a
it's in
good thing. And
groups.
throughout that whole time, as much as they're having fun and there to dote on them, they're being educated, knowingly and unknowingly. You know, so that's the time to instill these sort of things. And The best thing is when and when people leave and they say we can't wait to come back. And
Yeah, isn't
if
that
I made
beautiful?
somebody happy and they've
Mm-hmm.
got to come and learn about something and made their day and forgot about everything, then my mission's been a success.
Yeah. You have a very interesting Instagram page, which I've fallen in love with. And just today, you posted something on about Joey Cashew, a little goat. Can you tell us about Joey?
Joey, you have a moment and I'll run and grab him.
Sure. Yeah, we do. Definitely.
Hold on one second. I'll go grab him. And you can, I know everybody else won't be able to see him, but at least you guys will see
Sure.
So here he is.
Hi, Joey.
And you can
He's
hear him.
adorable.
Oh,
Hi.
he was in, we have a crate in the foyer. So when he's in there on, sort of when we're out doing chores and stuff, but when we come inside, he runs around like a maniac. And what we're trying to do with him is we're going to see if we can house train him,
Okay.
potentially. But when he does get older, he'll go outside with his siblings. But I think a lot of times with him being so special, I want to have him running around loose if possible.
Yeah.
So
What makes him
everybody.
so special,
Yeah,
Jim?
what's his story?
Well, when he was born, the ironic thing is he's the same coloration of his mother, which is a brown, let's say for all the people that can't just listen to us, he has white markings on his head and on his ears, and he's a brown coloration. And the ironic thing is he's the same color as looks like his mother. But for some reason, his mother rejected him and took his two siblings. And the siblings are black and white. And I don't know why she didn't want to take him. And so in the beginning, we would go ahead and hold her so he could nurse. And then she would become a little more agitated. And eventually she would hit him with her head. You know, she would hit him and knock him away. So at that point, we just would take him. And so he's being bottle raised. And, you know, he lives inside. He's just got to the point now where he's jumping up on the couch and on the furniture. He's amazingly funny. And I never
He's
thought at
so
this point in
cute.
time in my life I'd have a goat in the house.
Now, what are those two little round things on the top of his head?
Okay, so that is where his horn follicles are and were. And when a male goat is a week old, we bring them to the veterinarian and they cauterize them. And what happens is we're removing that horn follicle because what that's doing is it's preventing his horn growth. So what's going to happen, those two little buttons, as they're called, or caps, they're going to fall off here shortly, and then that's going to all heal over. And it's not something, look, he doesn't mind me rubbing it, touching it. There's no pain there. If there was, he sure wouldn't want me touching it. He actually loves to
Definitely.
scratch. So what that does is it prevents the horns from ever coming in because a lot of times goats are mischievous and getting into everything, and they have a tendency to get their horns stuck, and also they're always playing and fighting with each other. So, just to alleviate any kind of problems, and with our guests handling them, I don't want anybody getting hurt. And it's just for their safety. People think it's similar to, you know, it's not a painful thing because it's done under anesthesia. So, they're not feeling it when it happens. That day when they come home from the veterinarian, he's rubbing his head on you and not even, you know, they never leave
Noticing.
her. And I'm sure there is discomfort, but it's for their safety anyhow later on, and for all the interaction with them. Like right now, if he had little nubs digging into you, it is not really a comfortable thing when they start rubbing their horns on you.
Can you tell us how Frosty is doing now?
He's doing excellent. He's doing very well, working on training, and because just like with anything, the more interaction that you do with an animal, that the better they are. He's being, I've halter training him, picking up his feet, because like cows are like a horse in the sense of any animal, especially a goat, because like with their little hooves, you have to trim their hooves when they get older, because it grows down. This outer wall grows down like our fingernail, and it grows to be protective, like a shoe in a way, their hoof. So you have to trim that when it grows unnaturally. So like with Frosty, I'm teaching him now, so he learns to pick up his feet so I could trim his feet.
Isn't that
My
great?
other cattle out there, I can't, because they've never had that done and they wouldn't appreciate it. But Charlie is my biggest steer. He was a bottle baby that I raised. He's going to be 4 and on May 29th.
Oh.
So he's about 1,200 pounds now, and he'll pick up his feet for me. And so I'm able to
Wow.
do that. And but I've taken him to places. We actually took him down to New York City, to Manhattan, to the New York Times Center building, and took him up a freight elevator to do a function in
Oh
December.
my goodness.
So if
That is awesome.
when you like, he's the perfect example, and I don't know why he is such a good boy. But when we take him somewhere, he is so in tune to me that the outside environments aren't really affecting him. And
Wow.
it's such a privilege for me. Like, I checked on him. I was concerned. I was more afraid being in the city than he was. And when we unloaded him out, I looked at him in the trailer, and I seen all he wanted to do was feed off of me.
Isn't
In
that
order to,
beautiful, that bond?
yeah. And I find, long as, when they want to feed off of you, and if you're not, it's like with anything, like a child, when something's going wrong, if you don't react, you're their security. And if they're going to react and feed off of you, and an animal is no different. And if you go along and nothing is bothering you, and you can be their anchor, there's nothing for them. And he the whole time I went right through, and nothing fazed me, and he followed me right through. But it's a testament of how your animals, the same as your children, are going to react, because
They
they're
trust
everything.
that
Yeah.
trust,
That trust and the security factor of knowing that, if you're not afraid of it, it's the same way. And I tell people it's the same way with driving a horse. Now, a horse has blinders on when you're driving them, and all you have is those two little reins in your hands, and you've got to have a lot of trust. And when something big and scary is coming along, that a horse is a prey animal, where in terms of, they're on the bottom of the food chain in their mind, and they want to run away from that. You've got to be there physically
Direct.
and through comfort to control them, why they shouldn't be all upset. And that just comes from that connection, that bond you have with them. That security, you can't get all excited and think something, you can't be screaming at the top of your lungs in fear and think everything else is going to be going behind you okay. If you watch some of these animals, and if they're calm and collected, you'll look at the person that's raising them. And if you have an animal that's bouncing off the wall and really nervous and everything, look at it. They're a reflection on who they're around all the time.
Exactly. You tell our listeners how they can find you on social media.
On social media, we're at Elk Ravine on Instagram, Elk Ravine Farm on TikTok, and also on Facebook. And our website is elkravinefarm.com.
Perfect. And one final question. If you could be an animal, what animal would you be and why?
I think it would possibly be, I think it would be some sort of large bird of prey, not in the sense that it's a bird of prey, just something that you could just be able to fly over top of everything and see all of the beauty of nature, and get a perspective. And that's coming from somebody that's afraid of heights.
That's
Oh, that's cool. That's great.
So that would be some sort of bird that could fly above everything and just see all the beauty of this land and the whole world. It would be wonderful just to see all of
Oh,
that great stuff. So that's why
that's
I would like to
great. Oh, we need more people like you, Jim.
that. Thank you.
Definitely. Well, birds of prey are so beautiful in their own right as well. So,
Yes, exactly.
they are.
thank you so much for chatting with us and for taking that time. And it's been an absolute pleasure to host you. It's been fascinating.
Thank you so much for having the interest in what we're doing.
Well, we hope to chat with you again very soon.
Thank you very much.
So, to you, our listeners, please remember to tune in to all our podcast episodes on howlingtalent.com, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And don't forget to share them with your friends. We love welcoming new listeners. So, until next time, everyone, take care.